The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions. Hello and welcome to the Christmas, well, pre-Christmas edition of Insider Exchange. We finally know how Charlie Sheen feels. That's because we don't have snacks.
Oh.
And the Charlie Sheen reference is because there was a time where he didn't have snacks because the Colombian cartel decided to cut him off. Make of that information what you will. We do still have coffee, though, and it's primarily because it still comes in Christmas cups that I suppose we've gone back here. We also did get yelled at for not going back to Starbucks every now and then, so we are doing that. But we do have quite the show coming up. We're going to be doing our final review of certain things before we take a year-end break. Next week is our Christmas special, which means we're going to be on holiday after that. So this week, it's the last week, we have to get through serious business, and we're going to see how much of that serious business we can get through. We've got some very interesting numbers to make sense of when we get to our Make It Make Sense segment, and we're also going to be giving you some useful updates of things that have happened. So let's kick things off. Let's get the show on the road.
98 are currently collapsing.
The privilege of welcoming one of our good friends into studio.
So not even Buffett listens to Buffett.
Sue me, China, if you must.
1 of 22 on AC, but you're not getting that at home.
Ken, there's quite a bit to discuss.
The stock is cheap.
The last podcast I did.
Introduce me.
I'm Jimmy Munaha.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Let's kick things off, as we always do, with useful updates. We have an 8-minute timer to get through as many updates as we can. It's never enough time, and apparently we've learned we get in trouble if we don't get it done.
And you were talking fast there. I mean, I'm the fast talker here. You were catching speed.
I'm panicking. We've already lost 10 seconds. So, first useful updates. Celsi listing. We are officially listed. The listing went off last week. Mm. We did see that ahead of that listing, the offer price was revised down by some 3 billion rand in the case of the valuation, down to 26.50. The listing comes through fairly uneventfully, as you said.
Thursday was quite boring. Listing day closed to buck up. Friday I got all excited because it was announced that Alan Gray had bought 15.5383% of the company.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they obviously see something we don't. I've seen actually a couple of reports out saying that this is an outperform, this is a buy, this is a good stock, this is not advice. But a whole bunch of them, peeps are liking it. I need to maybe dig more. I'm just like, can't a Capitec say straight to MTN? Why does Capitec need Celsi?
Still the question that remains. That's the useful update on it, though, because that's what we're doing for this segment. Next one is Walmart. Walmart 2.0. There is a second store out there, folks.
Which is the 2.0 part.
It's the 2.0 part. It's in Four Ways Mall, and it turns out they do have some international things. Perhaps I must have missed them.
I haven't been.
There's a couple here and there.
On my way back from studio this morning, so what, just after 7, I did see 2 Walmart delivery bikes, branded as Walmart and everything. They're a long way from Four Ways.
Mm-hmm.
I've also seen a lot of media stuff saying they're coming for Checkers 6060 with 2 stores. Like, how are they going to deliver? How are they going to deliver to me in Rosebank or my sister in Durban or someone? We'll see. Actually, I should go visit.
I've got one comment on that outdoing 6060. Guys, the revenue of 6060 at the moment is more than the market cap of some companies that we have listed in South Africa.
Actually,
so,
that's a really good
very
point.
Ambitious.
Yeah.
Next update that we have, gambling tax. The National Treasury has come out to say that they are potentially exploring a gambling tax. I suppose we'll get an announcement on it if it is to be implemented at the main budget in February. I caught up with the Deputy DG for Financial Policy and something else.
Okay.
Someone in National
Deputy
Treasury.
Deputy DG.
To get an explanation on this.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's off the back of what we saw, 1.5 trillion rand in gambling revenues.
But how does it solve the problem of gambling? It just raises revenue.
And it's specifically aimed at the online gambling market, which is where the source of the problem is.
Sure. Again, but it doesn't solve the problem. It just makes revenue for Treasury.
Which has been raised. Other people have said, but that just legitimizes the illegitimate gambling houses. And that means then have to pay a tax.
We have a country, a constitution or whatever that says gambling is legit. Okay, fine, well and good. And raising 20 billion, which is the number I heard off gamblers, I've got no problem with that. But let's actually try and solve the problem, which is like ban advertising, ban money. You know, that actually helps solve the problem. But hey, we'll take the 20 billion. Doesn't solve the problem.
Doesn't solve the problem. Next, trade surplus. South Africa's trade surplus decreasing ever so slightly, but always nice to see that we actually have one.
Yeah, so we do. And it was 15.6 billion in October. That means that our exports were 15.6 billion rand more than our imports, which means is why we've seen the stronger rand. In September, it was 22.3 billion. It really is. So it is gold, diamonds, those sort of things. It's the precious metals that are saving up. And truthfully, lower oil price, that helps. So look, it's nice to have. It helps with balance of trade. Absolutely. We will take it.
Take that, tariff uncle. It is half time. We're going to take a half time break and we'll be back with the second half of useful updates to see if we can get through the rest of them. And we're back from the halftime break. We're getting into the rest of the useful updates that we have, and hopefully we can get them done in 3 minutes and 55 seconds. RSA retail savings bonds, 5-year at 8%.
Sorry. Yeah, so this is basically you're lending the government money. It's fun because it's primary market, right? So you haven't got capital risk unless the government defaults, and then you get your return. You smile sweetly when I say unless the government. They own the printing press. They can print the money, no stress. And back in the pandemic, I mean, my wife and I picked up something at 11.5%. You could have got 11.75%, locked in for 5 years. It's now 8%. It was 9% for November. So if you open a new one in December, 8%. Just shows you what's happened to our bonds. I mean, 375-point move in our short-dated bonds over a couple of years is monster.
It is. And if you think about the fact that if we're looking at inflation at 3%, or even the 3% target to be what's kept in mind by the South African Reserve Bank, that is an inflation-beating return every single year.
So they've got inflation-linked bonds, and there was an arb there, but the problem is you needed to short one and lift the other, and you can't do that. So.
Too complicated. Next update, the buyout, Curro's buyout.
Yeah.
The Yanni Mouton Foundation had previously said they would only continue with the buyout if it was without condition or with acceptable conditions.
Mm-hmm. That's always the case, surely.
The Competition Commission has come back with those conditions. They've come back with some interesting conditions around what it is that the new owners, i.e. the foundation, would need to do to have the deal go through. Very interesting around things like ensuring that there is a substantial positive contribution towards education, including historically disadvantaged persons. Now, we don't know whether they're going to agree to the conditions or not, but they are conditions to that buyout now.
They're going to agree to it, and they're going to say, I mean, part of what they're going to be doing, right, as Curro, is surely putting it a foundation to help historically disadvantaged individuals.
That's the hope, right? Yeah. I suppose that's why you have that in place.
They're planning to do so. I think Mr. Mouton's foundation is going to say, deal.
Cool. Yeah. Let's go ahead. Right. Last couple of updates that we have to get through. Standard Bank Group, the first bank on the African continent to implement the Chinese payment system. Ordinarily, that would surprise people, except if you are Simi. There's a new name for us. Simi, Simon and Jimmy. If you are Jimmy and Simon, and you happen to know that ICBC, that is the Industrial Bank of China, I'll get you the full name for that.
Biggest bank in the world.
Yes, biggest bank in the world. Industrial and Commercial Bank of China happens to own more than 20% of the Standard Bank Group, it would make sense that, i.e., a Chinese payment system would be implemented by a bank that is partly Chinese owned. So,
yeah, it was quite fun. When I worked at Standard Bank, this deal was being done. I was down in Simon Street head office, and you knew when the Chinese peeps were in town because they had hundreds of TVs all over the place and they would all be showing CCTV. what's that communist Chinese TV, whatever it is?
That's CCTV. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow.
No, that's CCTV, which is part of the bundle, and it's like, oh, the Chinese are in town.
Well, that's interesting. I used to do commentary for CCTV at some point many, many moons ago. Fun times. Last update that we're going to get through, and we have 42 seconds to get through it. G20 drama. We held the G20. We did it right. Then we got uninvited to Mar-a-Lago or Miami, wherever the leaders summit is happening next year. Then we said, you can't uninvite us. Now we've been told we are being uninvited, and now it's weird.
It is complicated because apparently, by the way, this works is like you don't don't get invited, you just kind of like know it's happening in a row, I suppose. Much like, you know, I don't know, Mandela's funeral, people just kind of pitched up. I don't know. How do they uninvite us? Decline us visas?
No. Yes, that's the 2 points on it. One, decline us visas, absolutely. And the second is that... Oh, I've forgotten the second point and we're out of time. Oh, we're dead. We're in trouble. We don't know what happens. Okay, we're not going there anyway. It doesn't matter. That was useful updates. We ran out of time. I lost my brain for a second there. It'll come back to me in one of the other segments and we'll see. Oh, that was the other point. You can't uninvite a founding member, but it's too late now because we're out of time. It doesn't make any difference and no one's listening anymore. Let's get into the deep dive. And we're moving on to our deep dive. We are diving into the South African Rand, its performance over the 2025 year, and potentially what lies ahead for 2026 as potentially the best performing emerging market currency of the year. Mm-hmm. I think this is worthwhile to close out the year looking at the performance of the Rand. And before we get the show on the road, I'm going to put two numbers out there.
Mm-hmm.
16 Rand 50, mm-hmm. 19 Rand 92.
Good numbers.
Good numbers. Massive range.
So the 1992 was, what, about the 3rd of April or so?
Liberation Day.
And Iran got absolutely smacked. It also, when we got grey-listed back in Feb 23, yes. We hit 1960, 1970.
Yes.
But 1992, worst level ever. And 1650, I had Bianca Botha Citadel on my show, morning show. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, and she's usually cagey with targets.
Mm.
And I said to her, what's your target Q1 next year? She said 1650. Didn't even take a breath. 1650. And the short answer is, yeah, I mean, we're breaking 17. That's the deal. I think longer term, you're probably going to 15, but yeah.
I had an interesting lunch on Friday.
Oh.
With the central
bank. I worked on lunch on Friday, which is not my idea of interesting. You tell your story because mine was boring.
So mine was having lunch with the Central Bank of South Africa.
Oh, that's not interesting. That's like styling in step. Did you go to the big black edifice in Pretoria?
No, I was across the road from you, 54 and Bath.
Oh, how boring is that? I mean, relative.
Great stuff, right? But it was a sit down looking at just generally what the year was like.
Mm-hmm.
Opportunity to really ask some interesting questions. And one of the questions that came up, and I wanted to know the answer as well, was what is the revised target? I mean, the central bank does a list of projections and numbers and calculations and formulas and models and those sorts of things. And they've got all of this data. And I asked what the potential impact would be of having now revised our inflation target down by
Was this with the governor?
The governor, the deputy governors.
Right, no, I mean, those are like, so. You were with the governor. So carry on.
And advisor to the governor and the chief economist of the central bank. So pretty much the smart people that are much smarter than you and I, and maybe not you, but definitely smarter than me.
I didn't get an invite, so patently smarter than me.
And the question was what the impact would be. And of course, South Africa's risk premium comes with a lot of factors, and that's what affects the rand and those sorts of things. And I asked then, okay, we've now revised the target down from an inflation perspective by 150 basis points. Surely that has a positive knock-on effect on the market, and that will then start to anchor almost our currency differential or our risk premium a lot lower than where it currently is.
Mm-hmm.
By what percentage, though? Nobody knows. Nobody can tell. And for me, that speaks to just how much or just how broad the risk premium aspect of the rand is.
Yeah.
If it's an unquantifiable thing, it means that there are so many unquantifiable elements that all need to move in sync or move a certain way and all of that. I mean, things like GDP or the growth prospects of the country, the political stability, the policy decision, all of those sorts of things. And again, the inflation conversation is in part a policy decision coming out of National Treasury, enforced, administered and implemented by the central bank. So that's just one aspect of it. But surely, and I can see where Bianca then comes through with a 16 Rand 50 call on the Rand to say we've breached 17 Rand even before this was an official announcement by National Treasury. And if we happen to go into the new year with our ducks in a row, it doesn't seem far-fetched.
It absolutely doesn't. And there's, you know, the first thing, in the simplest sense, your currency weakens by the difference between your inflation and your trading partner's inflation.
Yes, the inflation rate differential.
Correct, Amanda. Which currently between us and the US is about 0.4%. In the past, it's been like 10 or 12%.
Mm-hmm.
So which means our currency should be more stable. It should be less volatile. We're more competitive with exports because if we're exporting to a country with 2% inflation and we've got 5%, we get 3% more expensive every year. Inflation aside, so we get hit by that. I mean, it's just good news all around. Where does it drive it? Yeah, that I don't know. I'm a simple oak, so I just look at a chart and I put some
lines on.
I just do like horizontal lines. I don't do like bendy ones because that's just like subjective. My horizontal lines tell me that 17 is a big number and we've broken it already and that's going to go. Once we've done that, I got 16, 20. Frankly, 15 is on track. Might take some time. It sounds completely stupid, but hey. There's also the fun fact that we've seen dollar weakness. Now, the dollar is weak over the year, although it has strengthened in recent days. And for some reason, I'm getting the Hang Seng because I clicked the wrong button. But I mean, the dollar is having a fairly horror year. The dollar index was, 109 when Trump came in. It's now 99. It's been down to 96. That's a monster move. But even when we were seeing some dollar strength week before last, we were seeing Rand strength at the same time. And folks are going to say to me, this is precious metals. Sure. I mean, a lot of this is precious metals. We talked around balance of trade and those sort of things, budgets, etc. Hey,
take it. Yeah, it's still a win.
And the trick is our Rand a one-way bet? Sure. Okay, I can accept that. Over the long term, our Rand's a one-way bet to weaker. But can that story change? And change in two ways. One, where the bet becomes smaller. In other words, it's only going to lose a few percent a year instead of 10. Mm-hmm. And two, could it flip in its head and no longer be a one-way bet?
Yeah, because now we're talking about volatility, right? And what international market participants absolutely love about the South African Rand, you ask any analyst, any trader in the world, is the Rand-based volatility. You get some consistent moves, consistent swings, good volatility, and it makes for good trading opportunities at the Rand. We have a Rand that kind of sticks to its key levels, the levels you're mentioning, sticks to support and resistance levels, almost as though, yes, it does move quite erratically a lot, but it is far less erratic than other emerging market currencies, and that's why traders like that. Now, the question then becomes, is in stabilizing the current situation in South Africa, we've lowered inflation, so we're anchoring inflation lower. We've come off a grey list. Mm-hmm. We've got a trade surplus that we just spoke about in our useful updates. We're now looking a little more optimistic as an emerging market, as though we have our ducks in a row. And for me, I think the tipping point to answer your question, Sai, around could we see things change on the Rand, is if we have economic growth.
Well, imagine
Exactly. The moment you start punching for South Africa, it's not even a lot. For South Africa, the moment we punch at 2%, because for the last 16 years, we haven't even seen 2%.
Mm-hmm. Barely get one.
And our economy is capable of doing 3.5% to 4%, even 5%, I believe. So the moment you get to 2% and you're getting GDP figures that we haven't seen in over a decade, the market's going to start to look at the South African story and the South African economy and the Rand and be like, okay, we have been hard on them for the last, decade and a half. Maybe it's time to let up.
Yeah. And the story on Bloomberg this morning, Trump has decided on his next Fed chair. Didn't name names, but did say they will be cutting interest rates. So suddenly we've got an America doing some crazy nonsense stuff. I hate the idea that to say that this is a big point in time and things are going to be different, because typically they're not, they're always the same and all of that, et cetera, et cetera. But there is a story here that says, maybe. I mean, like, really, maybe.
Possibly, right?
It is possible. And you know what? Maybe not different as in sort of the other side of the coin, where we're using, where the Rand is now strengthening and the dollar's the peso. Maybe just different in that the expected sort of, we've been doing, 4, 5, 6% weakness a year over 20 years. Maybe that drops to 0 or 1 or whatever. And that might just be that difference.
Yeah, so we're not going to shoot the lights out overnight, folks. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah, that's the other big thing. This is a process.
It's more around, we finally might be able to narrow some deficits. We finally might be able to have debt servicing costs contained because they grow at a lower inflation rate and therefore we're able to borrow at a cheaper rate as a South African economy. Mm-hmm. This is something the central bank governor said before and has been a very big talking point for National Treasury as well. We finally might be able to get some form of movement from the participation between public and private sector. We finally might be able to get some infrastructure development. Again, we're saying possibly and some, and we're using all of these speculative words. Yeah. And that's what the market prices into the Rand, right? The market says, guys, there's a lot of speculation. You say this, it doesn't happen. You do this, it doesn't happen. The speculation around the South African story is felt directly in the Rand. But that's the story for every country.
Yeah.
The measure of a country is its currency. As to what's happening there, how markets are perceiving that particular economy, less around the performance of the companies and how well those companies are doing from a balance sheet perspective, that's reflected in the JSE. But the measure of strength of the country itself and the confidence investors have in that is felt almost exclusively in the currency.
Yeah, yeah. And it is an important point that this is not Tuesday. Mm. That this is a slow, you know, our government is talking our 1.8% from Treasury over the next 2 years GDP growth. Who did I chat to? Standlib's only got 1.5 for next year. You know, it's going in the right direction, but it's not yet at 2 or 3%. And sort of fundamental changes, it's seldom that you get someone like Trump who comes in who just like flips things, you know, throws a table in the air and scatters everything. You know, things usually happen sort of, you know, at a glacial pace. Mm.
What's interesting that you bring up Trump now, I remember being a bit concerned when we started getting all of this pushback from the United States. Mm-hmm. And again, we can debate whether or not all of this is centered around a particular ICJ case or not. Mm-hmm. That's a story for another day. My concern was, can South Africa's economy sustain the blows from the United States? Because it doesn't matter what relationship we have with them. It doesn't matter what happens in the world. When someone the size of China, the United States, the EU, hurls a punch at you, boxing terms, that's a heavyweight punch being thrown at a flyweight or even a middleweight, if we are that at this point. So it hurts.
Yeah, we can survive it, but let's be very clear. It hurts.
And we can't survive a lot of them.
It hurts a lot. Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what's interesting, though? Mm. I felt, though, that over the course of 2025, with the way the international community has responded to South Africa, amidst everything that's happened from the other side of the world and the colors of offices that we shall not discuss. Mm-hmm. People have been, you know, smashing east wings and building ballrooms and still finding time to attack little old South Africa. The world has responded with something that's almost felt like it's cushioned our blows. The calm that's been shown from the world's perspective is almost an acknowledgement that a certain president is irrational on all fronts, and let's not take what he says at face value. And that you're seeing in the Rand as well. That I've seen where statement is made in the past, if it was made by any other president, would cause an immense amount of volatility. This time a statement is being made against South Africa, directly against the Rand and our country. Mm. And the Rand's like,
That's actually, I mean, the Rand is stronger today, this morning, and days gone past. I mean, it lost the week of Liberation Terrace. Our Rand lost 80-something cents in 1 week, like five trading days. And we are becoming a little more sanguine to it.
Mm. Okay. Perhaps that's where we should leave it for this year, folks. We'd love to get your thoughts on the South African Rand. We've got a call at 16 Rand 50. We did this last time around where we took polls on the Rand levels. If I remember correctly, I think I came in closest on those Rand expectations. I remember Sean Dendario was here with us. We might just do that again, folks. Give us your thoughts on the Rand. Do we see 16.50? Do we see 15 Rand? Do we see 18 Rand? We'd love to hear what you think around that and potentially what factors would drive us to get to that to those levels. We're going to leave this conversation on that note. We're going to get into our Make It Make Sense, and we'll come back to the Rand story perhaps in the new year. And wrapping these up with our Make It Make Sense segment, we're going to be taking a look at some interesting developments, interesting data, interesting numbers, and trying to make sense of them. And I say interesting very loosely there, because sometimes the things just aren't thinging and we don't know what to make of it. So that's why we have the segment. We're going to get into three things, three developments. And the first relates to a bank and a lady who has unfortunately lost her life. So lady passed away, and following her passing, subsequently, miraculously, was unable to pay for her car. Wonder why. Obvious reasons. And nevertheless, the bank then went and pursued legal action post that.
Against a dead person.
To repossess the vehicle, Simon.
Yo, banks.
Banks.
I mean,
the judge ruled.
Banks.
The judge ruled, and I will quote this in case someone still doesn't know this. I don't know which credit institution out there doesn't know this, but the judge made a clear statement. Once death occurs, the individual ceases to have a juristic existence and legal proceedings may not be initiated or continued against them.
Correct.
That seems fairly straightforward.
You can go to the estate.
Yes, absolutely. And the judge goes on to say that, saying, instead, any cause of action thereafter must be directed against the deceased estate, properly represented, rather, by an appointed executor. Mm. So that is what logic would dictate. Now, court application has been dismissed from the judge's perspective against the bank, but it looks as though the court proceedings were entered into after her untimely passing. And so the question there was, I mean, how did you even enter into the court proceedings? And the bank says, well, we had no knowledge of this untimely passing, and therefore that's why we did so. And even though after they were made aware of it, they went to the court to say, oh, we've been made aware of it by the person's parents that this has been the case. At that point, the judge said, well, we can't simply withdraw the matter. We can't simply. So they ruled on it. Okay. The judges ruled on it. It's been removed. Yeah. But filing a lawsuit against someone who cannot answer for that lawsuit themselves. That's what we were trying to make sense of there. The next one is perhaps the less strange number. Remember the Vodacom Please Call Me case that was settled? Mm-hmm. We've got a settlement figure anywhere between 300 million and 750 mm-hmm. million. We don't know where we sit on that number. Mm-hmm. We're not going to find out. It's all under lock and key. There was a company called BlackRock Mining that came through, not related to BlackRock in the United States, and probably not a mining company in South Africa either. BlackRock Mining came through and said that initially, back in 2011, there was an agreement that they had in place with the winner, obviously Mr. Makata, of the case. And the agreement was that they would finance the legal proceedings of that in exchange for 40% of the settlement value. Mm. We've got an update now that says that from BlackRock's perspective, they confirmed that they spent at least 5 million rand on the legal proceedings back then before they were sidelined and before they were taken out of the picture. And we know that the settlement, both the winning party and their legal representatives have agreed to put aside 40% of that settlement while they clear up this
case. Yeah, so you can get some money for Christmas.
Right. My question is, 5 million rand investment in 2011 for a 200 million rand return. Now, how I got the 200 million was 300 to 700 million rand settlement.
Okay, so call it 500.
I call 500 as your midpoint, so, 40% of 500.
I mean, yowza. I mean, 5 million was not the cost of those legal fees over the next 14 years.
No, and certainly not.
So why did they only pony up 5 million? Now, apparently he discontinued the agreement, but he did it with the wrong company or something. Hmm. I mean, look, short answer, judges are going to rule. And frankly, if he gets 500 or 300 million, either way, he's got more money than he can spend on Tuesday. But sure. I mean, there's a company, there's
talk
companies.
About ROI, sorry?
There's companies in Cape Town who do this. They will fund your legal thing and you can invest into them. They will fund your legal battle and they take a split of profits.
Okay.
Yeah. I've had them on the show sometimes. When they, I mean, the trick with it is, man, these things take time. I've got a friend's father who's working on a legal issue with a diamond miner for 2.5 billion since 2003. 22 years. Now he gets 10% of that settlement when it settles, but
if it settles. This point, 23 years later is now an if.
People are going to be dead before it happens. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly a big gamble to take.
Because there's other lawyers who want money as well.
Mm. Those other lawyers said, we won you the case. We got you over the line. We went to the...
Shame he might only end up with 100 million.
I don't know.
No, look, to be clear, it's lots. It should be more. I mean, Shamil should have given him a billion, but hey, or two or three.
Well, Vodacom would disagree with you on that side.
Oh, yes, they do.
Well, that's what we're going to make sense of now. There is a provision from the balance sheet perspective for Vodacom. So they can afford to settle. So
yeah, they can.
And I'm sure they're not concerned. They're saying, we're going to put the money in an account. You guys figure it out.
We will find out the exact number in the next annual report.
Yes, when we see exactly how much.
I don't know why they're being so secretive. Because we are going to find out and we are going to remember to check and we are going to comment on it. Come on, Vodacom.
And markets have memories.
Yes.
I think the market will definitely analyze that. Definitely when it comes around. Final one that we're going to try and make sense of. Outrageous Black Friday spend. Now, we've done this last year when Black Friday came around last year. We spoke about some of the things that people spend on, and we're going to look at some of the popular spends of this year. But I have a claim from APSA that an individual had transacted and spent on Black Friday at a point of sale system at a car rental company, Simon.
Car rental company.
We've done this exercise on finding you your perfect supercar, right?
Yeah.
So let me give you an idea of what a particular car rental company in South Africa might charge, right? So if you were to rent out a McLaren 720S, you would have to pay around 150,000 rands in deposit.
Yeah.
And the monthly rental, if you're looking to rent that out over the course of a monthly cycle, would be potentially around the region of 540,000 rand for the month.
Whoa.
So call it 500,000 for the month. An individual over Black Friday went into a car rental company, we don't know which one to be particular, and spent 1 million rand at a point of sale. Now, I don't know what they were renting. I don't know how many cars they rented. I don't know any of these details. We're just 1 million rand car rental company. That's all we've got.
Because I thought, because you can get like an F-Type Jaguar for like 6 or 7 grand a day.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe they just rented an F-Type for, I don't know, a lot of days.
A lot of days?
A lot of days.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. A million rand a car rental.
At a car rental company. Which, first
I can
of
tell
all,
you, in my hood, we were all buying toilet paper. I mean, like the people were screaming down the road.
Yeah, yeah, but this, to be fair, that was Checkers' fault. You don't do 18 rolls of toilet paper at 99 Rand when it's usually around 150, 160 Rand.
170, 170.
I was in that queue as well.
So my secret was go first thing Saturday morning, no queue.
I beat you to it. They started the special on Thursday. I went on Thursday.
Oh.
Don't go over the weekends.
No. Friday.
Get ahead of the
Friday,
weekend.
Friday, Oxford Road was backed up, yes, because of toilet paper.
I saw the announcement, I think it was Wednesday night, saying they're kicking off the special on Thursday. I went in Thursday because I knew Friday and Saturday were going to be chaotic.
Okay, I'm trying to get back to the man who spent R1 million on a car hire.
Yeah, let's not get sidetracked here.
No, it makes no sense.
You could have bought the car.
I was going to say, you could buy the McLaren for $1 million.
Well, not the McLaren.
Or maybe
a second-hand McLaren.
Still.
But still, R1 million at a car rental company. Also, we don't really know what they were paying for. They could have been paying a long-term lease. They could have been paying outstanding debts or whatever. But R1 million was swiped at a car rental company. Black Friday spends don't make sense. There we go. That's what it is. And they get crazier and crazier each year. There was a Discovery client who spent R500,000. We don't know on what. There was another APSA client who spent 638,000 Rand booking an international holiday. I don't know where you're flying to, sir or madam.
I spent 5K on my credit card and my credit card throws up on me. These folks who drop half a bar or a bar.
Yes, comfortably. Okay. We're in the wrong line of work.
I know,
we're in the wrong line of work.
Yeah, yeah.
We're sitting here making podcasts. People are sitting here going on R1 million holidays and taking R1 million cars with them, apparently. That's what we're going to make sense of if we can. And that's the show for today, folks. Remember, next week is our Christmas special. It will look nothing like this and we don't even know what we're going to discuss on it. So stick around for that. It will come out over the Christmas period. If we don't speak to you, see you, hear you in the comments, see you in our DMs until next year, we wish you a blessed festive period. But of course, those Christmas wishes will come through next week as well. For now, we're kicking off December with an unfiltered opinion that might be relevant to this festive period as well. And it relates to service fees, particularly in restaurants. Oh, service fees tipping. And forced tipping. Oh. I call it forced tipping because they're very different.
Mm-hmm.
Two examples I want to throw at you. And more discuss around the unfiltered opinion. The question for the unfiltered opinion is, should service fees be mandated within the restaurant and consumer environment? And the two scenarios I want to pose at you, one is almost a mandated version, and the other one is a guilt trip of sorts, right? So let's start with the guilt trip example. I walk into a Starbucks. Now, Starbucks have been, this is not the employees of Starbucks. This is how the Starbucks system is built. When you purchase a Starbucks coffee, before you proceed to payment, there is a mandatory option to tip or not. So they give you what your bill is, and then the next screen is, do you want to add a tip before you have to confirm it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that is almost a psychological thing where you feel bad for pressing no. Some people don't feel bad for pressing no. Or how do you feel when you sit there and the person on the other side of the counter is looking at you intently, waiting for you to press no so they can acknowledge that you didn't tip them?
Look,
that
I tip very well as a rule, but I have no qualms saying no.
Okay.
I mean, T's and C's apply. I mean, I will tip at points, but like, yeah, if I don't feel like...
Cool. Okay, so less, maybe just more of a psychological conversation there. The second one, I went to a restaurant in the west part of Johannesburg. And you've got, I understand service fees for large crowds. Booking of 10, there's a mandatory service fee of 10% of the bill or whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a restaurant that I've been to before that didn't have this before, didn't warn people about it, and now suddenly has a 10% mandatory service fee over bills of 300 Rand or more. Now that raised two very interesting points for me.
Eat until 299, pay, then eat again and pay, but carry on.
But this is the thing. Two main points it raised for me. Number one, you didn't notify your customers or tell anybody or whatever it is. You just kind of slid it into there onto people's receipts and they can't do anything about it. So regardless of the size of party. And the second one is the amount. 300 Rand is a steak in some places.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to say that if I go there as a single individual without friends, parties, whatever, and I have a 302 Rand or a 250 Rand steak and a 52 Rand drink, which is what people do. I mean, Spur charges some of these prices as well. Nothing against Spur, nothing against any of the restaurant companies. It's not about the pricing here. It's about the fact that it's very easy to exceed a 300 Rand threshold. And now you're going to give me a 10% mandated service fee. For me, that doesn't make sense.
It makes no sense. I mean, okay, so maybe their argument is that, we're assuming that the service fee goes to staff, right?
And it's not. I don't want to make that assumption because they could go to breakages or whatever.
If it doesn't go to staff, then burn the place down.
And this is very different from you tipping the staff, because on the rest of the receipt, you still have an option to add a tip. So now if I add a tip on top of the service fee.
So then just make your food. Then you just adjust your prices. Make your prices more. So there's a restaurant, and I forget where it was. I want to say New York, but I might be wrong. The whole movement of no-tip restaurants, what do they do? They up their food charges by 15%, and they pay their staff a salary instead of saying you earn 95 cents an hour in tips, which is, you know, a horrible way of doing it. If this is just the way... No, come on, man.
South Africa has a legacy of restaurants underpaying their staff and issues in that respect as well. And I suppose other countries have that as well. The question from a consumer perspective is, what should that level be for? I mean, if we're out as a party of 10 and we're going to rack up a bill anyway, you're going to get the orders from everybody and you're going to have a higher bill amount. And I understand charging a 10% service fee if you have to allocate additional wait staff to us or additional resources from a restaurant point of view. But what does that look like if it's Jimmy and Simon going out for a breakfast, our bill happens to come to 301 Rand, and now we're being levied a 10% fee for that?
Yeah, no. Dodge, short answer. But I'm even, if there's a table of 10 and they put money on, I'm like, what if we were 5 tables of 2? I mean, you just like make the prices proper and pay people salaries.
Mandatory service fees, folks. Give us your thoughts on that. We don't know what to make of it. We've shared our unfiltered opinions around that. Again, this is nothing to do with rewarding the service members or the hardworking wait staff that cater to you whilst you are at the restaurant. Please feel free to keep tipping generously, especially into this festive period, but whether or not we should be forced to do certain things remains to be the question. That's the show. That's the unfiltered opinion. And until next week, investing isn't hard. Just try it.
The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.